Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29, Text Number 36. Etad Bhagavato Rupam.
Etad Bhagavato Rupam.
Brahmana Paramatmana.
Brahmana Paramatmana.
Param Pradhanam Purusham.
Param Pradhanam Purusham.
Devam Karma Vichestitam.
Devam Karma Vichestitam.
Etad Bhagavato Rupam.
Etad Bhagavato Rupam.
Brahmana Paramatmana.
Brahmana Paramatmana.
Param Pradhanam Purusham.
Param Pradhanam Purusham.
Devam Karma Vichestitam.
Devam Karma Vichestitam.
Etad.
This
Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Rupam,
Rupam,
form,
form,
Brahmana,
Brahmana,
of Brahman,
of Brahman,
Paramatmana,
Paramatmana,
of Paramatma,
of Paramatma,
Param,
Param,
transcendental,
transcendental,
Pradhanam,
Pradhanam,
chief.
Chief.
Purusham.
Purusham.
Personality.
Personality.
Devam.
Devam.
Spiritual.
Spiritual.
Karma vichestitam.
Karma vichestitam.
Whose activity?
Whose activities?
Translation. This Purusha, whom the individual soul must approach, is the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Brahman and Paramatma. He is the transcendental chief personality, and his activities are all spiritual. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In order to distinguish the personality whom the individual soul must approach, it is described herein that this Purush, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living entities and is the ultimate form of the impersonal Brahman effulgence and Paramatma manifestation. Since he is the origin of the Brahman effulgence and Paramatma manifestation, he is described herewith as the chief personality. It is confirmed in the Katha Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam. There are many eternal living entities, but he is the chief maintainer. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita also, where Lord Krishna says, Aham Savasya Prabhava. I am the origin of everything, including the Brahman effulgence and Paramatma manifestation. His activities are transcendental, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Janma kama cha me divyam. The activities and the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are transcendental. They are not to be considered material. Anyone who knows this fact, that the appearance, disappearance and activities of the Lord are beyond material activities or material conception, is liberated. Yogati tatvataha. Such a person, after quitting his body, does not come back again to this material world, but goes to the Supreme Person. It is confirmed here, Purusha Purusham Brajet, the living entity goes to the Supreme Personality, simply by understanding his transcendental nature and activities. So, Lord Kapila Dev has been describing the different paths which can lead us to understanding and connecting with the personality of Godhead. Some can't quite understand that God has a personal form as Bhagavan. Sometimes they can understand that if he is all-pervading, then his form must be an all-pervading form, something like the super soul. So for people, sometimes it's easier to think of God as the super soul because the super soul is everywhere. So they think of God. And most people think of God in terms that God is everywhere. I asked a little group of children the other day, ranging from about 4 to about 7 or 8, and I said, "Where is God?" And little girl, she's probably about 4.5, 5, max, she goes, "God is everywhere." And I thought, that's correct. See? So, you know, that understanding, that's the way they, you know, people think of God. Even from that age, that's sort of what sticks in their mind. You know, we know he's in the spiritual world, we know he's in the heart and he's in the temple, but her answer was really good. God is everywhere. You know, she's probably been to different temples and she knows God's watching her. So, you know, it's that concept, God is everywhere. But when you then see God standing in one place, like Krishna or Ram, they're just standing in one place. It's like Radha Bal over there. He stands just there on the altar. Then one may think, oh, how can he be God? Because God is everywhere. So then they find it harder to understand the Bhagavan feature, where God is standing as a person, where we can all see in one place. But he is the same, as Krishna says. So the generally, people first approach the Paramatma feature, more so than the Bhagavan feature, because it just doesn't quite fit in with their conception of God. But Krishna says in the Gita, chapter 6, you know, after explaining the Ashtanga Yoga process, which people follow to gradually come to meditate upon the Super Soul. And then in text number 31, he says, Sarvabhuta sitam yomam bhajat ikatvam asita sarvata vatamanopi sayogi mai vatate. The yogi who knows that I and the super soul within all creatures are one worships me and remains always in me in all circumstances. So this is the proper understanding of the personality of Godhead, is that, as very clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita, that the super soul and Krishna, the personality of Godhead in his different forms, such as Ram, Krishna, Nrisimha, same person, they are one. They are non-different from the super soul. But that concept is difficult. In the here, Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, text number 4, chapter 4, text number 9, Yogati Tattvata Chakra Deham Panajanma, that if we understand that the appearance and disappearance and activities of the Lord are beyond material activities or material conception, that person is liberated. So generally we think of the Lord within the heart that we can't see. But sometimes he appears, almost as if he's taking birth. So one may think, oh, so he has appeared. So whereas the super soul is always, you know, hidden within the heart, so I think there must be some material aspect of the super soul is manifesting temporarily or something. And then he disappears, like Krishna disappeared, or Ram disappeared. And then they perform all sorts of activities. So they just don't seem compatible with Vishnu, the super soul, the Lord who's maintaining all living entities. So it's very hard. But if one understands that, no, the super soul sometimes appears and sometimes it disappears, and in between he performs all activities, but that's the same person who's the super soul within the heart. Understanding that is more difficult than understanding the super soul, because it appears to be an ordinary person. And the trouble there is, of course, ordinary persons then may think that, oh, if an ordinary person like Ram or Krishna, who are obviously ordinary human beings full of lust and, you know, ambition and so many things, if they are non-different from the super soul, then I can also be non-different from the super soul. So then they draw that conclusion. It describes in this purport that of text number 9, it says, says the Vedic version, tatvamasi. You know, tatvamasi. You are that supreme truth. People apply that, you know, if Krishna, who appears to be an ordinary person, Rama, tatvamasi, you are non-different from the super soul. I am also an ordinary person. I am also non-different. Tatvamasi. Like that.
Which verse?
This is again from the purport of Bhagavad Gita 4.9. But he, actually, that Prabhupada says here, he says, he quotes this verse from the Vedas in this purport of 4.9. Eko devo nitya rinanu rakto bhakta vyapi hridyantaratma. The one supreme personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord, 4.9. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can without a doubt attain liberation. The Vedic version, tatvamasi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, you are the same Supreme Brahman, this personality of Godhead, is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. So that tatvamasi means that you are that supreme truth, you are the super soul, you are Brahman. You can apply that to Krishna, you can apply that to Ram. They are the full-fledged personality of Godhead himself. But for us, we cannot say that we are the super soul, or that we are, you know, from us is emanating the impersonal Brahman. We do not know even what is happening in the courtyard. You know, if we are the super soul, all knowing, and yet we cannot understand what is happening in different places. What to speak of what is happening in Russia, what is happening here, what, you know, we do not know. And you know, they may claim, some may claim that, oh, I am God, but somehow I've forgotten it and I've been covered over. But the personality of Godhead is fully in control of his various energies. He is never controlled by them. He is never controlled by Maya. So this tiny living entity, though, the jiva, we are the jiva, we can be controlled by the energies of God. So if we are controlling the material energy, you know, that doesn't stand out, because we have trouble maintaining ourselves and perhaps one little family, because the material energy is you know, controlling us in such a way that we're constantly struggling just to maintain even our own self, and at best a small family, especially in Kali Yuga, a very difficult job. And yet we're claiming to be the controller of the material energy which is maintaining or living in you. It just doesn't stand up. So, you know, the interesting thing is tattvamasi, that this is the foolishness, that generally people will not apply that to Krishna or Ram. So, because Krishna is, they think he's mythical, or, you know, fantasy. Even, you know, Prabhupada said of Gandhi that, you know, Gandhi himself, who studied the Gita daily, you know, he said, Prabhupada quotes him, you know, he said, "I do not think that such a person as Krishna actually ever existed." You know? So, you know, and more people follow Gandhi than Prabhupada or Krishna. You know, you have the Ramakrishna movement, so many of them. But strangely enough, they'll apply that, you know, tattvamasi doesn't apply to Krishna, doesn't apply, but it applies to me. Okay? So, you know, that's strange, you know, that to me that's a greater fantasy, you know, to say, yes, I am that super soul. That's a complete fantasy. You know, it's such a long way from reality. You know, it's, Prabhupada says, anyone who claims to be God, you can immediately take him as a dog. Very low. Very. This is what we, you know, we love about Prabhupada. You know, in different parts of the world, we were talking about this in Bhakti Bhai Bhava the other day, that, you know, hearing, how important it is to hear. In ISKCON, you know, all of us, including the current gurus, are hearing from Prabhupada. When we study his books, reading his books is another way of hearing from Prabhupada. He dictated these books. So, you know, we can read these books. It is another way of hearing, and we're hearing from Prabhupada. Sometimes in different parts of the world, there's a tendency now in preaching to almost hide some of the things that Prabhupada said. You know, let's be a little bit more gentle, a little bit more indirect. And therefore what happens is that sometimes some of the strong statements, even within ISKCON, devotees may not like to hear, because they feel, well, that's too strong, that's a bit over the top. You know, so let's, you know, hear from some of the current preachers who are, you know, don't repeat what Prabhupada is saying. And so that, you know, the tendency is to hear less of Prabhupada, or to be very selective in hearing. You know, I'll read, you know, I'll hear this, but I'm, you know, that part I'm going to pretend Prabhupada never said that. But he did. He said just straight out, you know, on a few occasions, that if someone claims to be God, that person, you can immediately take them, they're a dog. See? That's strong, isn't it? The beauty is, though, with Srila Prabhupada, is that he, you know, sometimes the harsh truth, there's a tendency to dance around it. No one wants to say it. You know, like, for instance, say amongst your friends, and someone steals from you, you think, oh, God, he's a thief. You know, but, you know, he's sort of amongst the friends, no one wants to say he's a thief, you know. Don't really like him, but, you know, everyone else, he seems to be popular. You know, but Prabhupada says the hard truth. When it comes down to it, you know, if someone misguides people so they do not think of the actual personality of Godhead, but instead they think of a dog with two legs who claims to be God, that person has ensured that all those persons who may have come to Krishna consciousness and heard the Gita, instead they will go to hell. Instead they will take birth millions and millions of times to be slaughtered by the material energy in all sorts of different bodies. You look around you at all the different people, you know, sitting in this room, and just pick out one that you'd like to be, you know, slaughtered by the material energy millions and by millions and millions of births. You just wouldn't wish that on anyone, would you? You know, you see these children here, you wouldn't wish it upon them. You know, 100 births, 1,000 births for you, 1,000,000 births for you. You know, somehow divert them from Krishna. So what sort of a person, you know, does that? You know, people kill one person, they get jailed. Someone who, you know, is influencing the lives of millions of people and diverting them away from the Gita, what sort of rascal is that? And that is another term Prabhupada said, one of the things we don't want to hear. You know, these scientists, they're rascals. I just pretend that never happened. The Prabhupada just said straight out. Now the beauty is that I'd never say that. Because if who am I? If I said that in ISKCON, say Prabhupada hadn't said it, but I said it, people would be throwing me out of the room now. The only reason you're not throwing me out is because you know that Prabhupada actually said it, I'm just repeating him. Otherwise, that Gunga is a rascal. He speaks too strongly. I don't use that word rascal. Wouldn't it? Thank God Prabhupada said it. You know, just straight out. You know, like that. You know, just like Prabhupada, you know, describes the scientists as rascals. You know, for many of them who are not God conscious, many of the previous, you know, some of the founding scientists were actually quite God conscious. But he's talking about those who literally try to teach the knowledge whereby they remove God as just nothing more than a fantasy, a myth. It just doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Again, they are condemning people to just materialistic life with no other spiritual. And their rascalism is, you know, I was watching a documentary about this scientist who was given the task. He was a very, very elevated scientist. He was given a task that he would discover the age of the Earth. And to do that, what they do is that they take rocks and that from deep in the Earth, and they measure the amount, I think it's lead, because elements like uranium, I think it is, you know, they, when they degrade, the atomic structure degrades, they gradually turn into another metal, which is lead. So by measuring that element, they know how long it takes for this other element to degrade. So by measuring the amount of lead, they can say, well, this has taken so many millions of years to degrade, because they understand that. So in this way, what he did was, in trying to find, you know, analyze lead and what have you, he found that there was lead in his laboratory, and therefore, you know, it contaminated the results. There was too much lead, so that was a problem. This person, he's the one who actually invented the modern scientific laboratories, which are completely sterile from any speck of dust or anything. He's the one who, because in order to produce the scientific evidence, he kept trying to purify his atmosphere, and literally he created. So that's why in the world now you have these, you know, absolutely sterile places you go, and not even a speck of dust gets in there, you know, nothing that shouldn't be in there, just what's meant to be there. So what happened was, and he even went down into the, they dug tunnels into the earth and everything, and still there was So what he found was that, on people, on their clothing, in the atmosphere, there was lead polluting the earth on a scale which was contaminating everything. And so he then tried to find out where that was coming from, and he found out it was coming from the petrol in the cars, and the petrol in the paint, things like that, especially the petrol in the cars. So he alerted the government that, we've got a problem. We're all being poisoned by lead at a significant rate. And there actually, at that time, there were cases, because by lead poisoning, you can actually go completely crazy. People were jumping out of windows, going completely crazy. And when they examined, they found there was so much lead in their system, it actually turned them crazy. So, it will kill you, lead, very dangerous, and it caused all sorts of deformities in children. So he alerted the government. Because the problem was that the governments were making so much money off petrol, and the petrol companies were owned the governments, as they do still. We shouldn't say that. But that they didn't want to hear about it. See, so that what they did then was, they got another team of scientists, one of the famous authorised scientists, to prove that he was wrong. But there is no contamination of lead. There's not a problem at all. You're exaggerating the results. And this court case went on for years, in the courts. Years and years and years. This scientist, just for the profit of the petrol companies, and the government quite happy with it, because they didn't want to lose billions of dollars. When it comes down to it, you're talking billions of dollars. And they don't care what the science is, just take the money and run. That's it. So, what do you call such a scientist who does that?
A rascal.
A rascal. And isn't that a soft word? Isn't that really gentle? Someone like that, he's killing your children. He's killing, destroying the earth. Then so many generations have to live in a world polluted by lead. We're still suffering from what they were doing in the 50s and the 40s. We're still suffering now. And you call him a rascal and someone says, oh, that's too strong. I'm sure everyone can think of a whole lot of other terms you call someone like that. See? But this process of hearing, we principally hear from Srila Prabhupada, and we should be very thankful that we have that opportunity to hear from Prabhupada, and that Prabhupada will present things just straightforward. And, that quality in Prabhupada just comes straight out. When you meet Prabhupada, if someone met Prabhupada, if you go through all the conversations of Prabhupada and each and every conversation, you study them, all the people that used to come into the room and speak with Prabhupada, scientists and politicians and what have you, you can see that they sense that Prabhupada would only speak what was authorised within the Vedic literatures, and he would just say that, he wouldn't come to any other platform to speak. If it was authorised by the scriptures, by the parampara, he would speak it. When I joined the movement, I knew nothing really, I'd read the Bhagavad Gita, I'd read the Nectar of Devotion, but really I can say I knew nothing about it, nothing about the Vedas, nothing about, But what you did sense from Prabhupada and from Prabhupada's books is, he was a person that would just speak something that was authorised. We had that faith from the very beginning. You knew. Prabhupada wouldn't tell you anything unless he was 100% convinced that this is coming in parampara. This is what the scriptures are actually saying. He would not make anything up. He would not add anything. He would not delete it. That faith we could have. And on the strength of his conviction and a dedication to just speaking the truth plainly, we made progress, because we heard from him even things that were difficult to hear, for many, many years, so many things. You imagine, you're just a hippie just coming off the street of Westerner. You know nothing about. The only thing you know is the Prabhupada's not going to tell you a lie. Whatever he says, you take it in and you listen to it and you say, well, I don't understand that. That's a really hard... You know, like in these verses of the Bhagavad Gita, it says, unless someone is a devotee, they have no good qualities. So that's the Bhagavad Gita speaking. If someone's not a devotee of the Lord, they don't have any good qualities. That's a really hard concept, you know. You know, when you think of, oh, gee, that's harsh. You know, what about the primary school teachers and the doctors and, you know. No, no good qualities. So, you know, but... You know, we understand Prabhupada is presenting. This Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching what, you know, the truth. And if you look at it, you know, then you will see that, you know, this is the actual, you know, if you study it and examine it carefully over many, many years, even though some things are hard to accept, you will see that this is the actual, you know, truth. There is not even, you know, a speck of illusion or cheating within it, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we got that not from knowing the Bhagavad Gita. We understood that not from knowing the Gita or the Vedas. We understood that because Prabhupada had that quality of speaking the truth like that. And he made a point that within his preaching throughout the world, he made sure that everything that had to be said was said, which is what Krishna did as well. You know, Krishna spoke on the battlefield of Kurukshetra for what? You know, half an hour, 45 minutes to Arjuna, something like that. Very, you know, not very long, even less. And Krishna spoke, and everything that had to be spoken about the entire Vedic knowledge, everything you need to know, he said that in the Gita. And Prabhupada did the same. He knew that for 10,000 years, basically he had to say what had to be said, because after him, who's going to be able to say that? Even some of the powerful gurus in our movement, if they repeat some of the things that Prabhupada said... You know, they can say them on the strength that he said it, but if they said it themselves, you know, there'll be all sorts of condemnation and, oh, you know, this, you know. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, you know, they said he had the chopping technique. That's how they call his. Imagine someone saying, oh, he's a really nice preacher. Chop, 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 chop. Really good preacher, you know. That he was called Simha Guru, the lying guru. The impersonalist. Prabhupada said that when they saw him coming down the street, they would cross to the other side. Otherwise they knew he would bow them up. You rascal, you know, why you're preaching this nonsense. Chop, 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 chop. So, you know, Prabhupada said what had to be said, and Krishna also said. In the Bhagavad Gita, if you want to know about what the Vedas, the essential things that you must know, that you can't leave one of them out, then that's what the Gita is. You know, it's like, say, you know, if a bus goes past and a little child says, what's that? And you say, oh, there's a big orange thing. You know, there's so many things left out of that statement. You know, the child's asking, what is that? The bus drove past. Oh, there's a big orange thing. Makes a lot of noise, doesn't it? You know, there's some things you really need to tell the child. You know, it's called a bus. What's its name? It's called a bus. And people get in it through the doors, and they sit in it, and the bus takes them where they want to go. And you can put a lot of people on a bus. And then, oh... So, Bhagavad Gita is like that. You know, there are certain things you need to know about the spirit soul. And the difference between the spirit soul and the supreme soul. If you don't know that, how are you going to advance in spiritual life? You can't even understand you're a spirit soul if you're not this body. And then furthermore, you don't understand the difference between yourself and the personality of Godhead. Then, the energies of the personality of Godhead, we are part of his spiritual energy, this is the material energy, this is not our home, we actually got to get back to the spiritual world. We don't belong here in the cycle of birth and death, this is a place of misery. And we do that by taking show of the Lord's spiritual energy, and we do that principally by associating with devotees and especially hearing from them. So, karma, which keeps us bound in the cycle of birth and death, that can be removed by the process of worshipping the personality of Godhead, either officially as yajna, where at the main events of our life, at least we know we've got to stop and connect what we're doing with the personality of Godhead, or through bhakti, where that yajna becomes a moment-by-moment loving exchange. That's also yajna, sankirtan yajna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there is no material or spiritual emanation which is not coming from him and which he is not the source of. He is the source of everything. He is the source of Lord Ram. He is the source of Nrisimhadev. He is the source of all the demigods. That is also very important. He is non-different from the super soul. He is also non-different from Ram. He is non-different from all the different forms of the personality of Godhead is one, although he exists in many, many different forms. And as one worships that one personality of Godhead, he will reciprocate accordingly. And therefore he has different forms. So if we want to love God, knowing that he is God and enjoying the association of the personality of Godhead, we may worship him as Narayan in one of his different Narayan forms. If we want to add a little bit more confidentiality and closeness in that relationship, we may worship him as Ram. If we want that relationship to be so sweet that the concept that he is God has no significance, then we worship him as Krishna for that. But actually that is the same person. Sometimes devotees are a little bit scared to worship Ram. You know, I've noticed that over the years. Yeah, that's a fact. Because, you know, they're thinking that, I'm reading the Gita and I'm supposed to only think of Krishna. And, you know, here we've got the Ram Festival, so, you know, I'll do it because it's an obligation, but, I'm more trying to be a Krishna bhakta than Ram. But actually, Ram is Krishna. Just like, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that, he is manifest in different ways in the material world, such as the banyan tree. So when we think of the banyan tree, we think of, oh, that's Krishna, that's his energy, you know, or the ocean. We look at the ocean, we think, oh, that's Krishna. The Krishna teaches us, you know, if you want to think of me, Arjuna, then here are all my different, you know, manifestations. These are all manifestations. They are just a little spark of my splendor, and by meditating upon them, it helps you to think of me. Even if you drink water, it helps you to think of Krishna. Yet, if we can drink water and think of Krishna, how much easier is it to worship Ram and think of Krishna? If we can drink water and think of Krishna, and yet somehow it's an impediment to think of Krishna while we're worshipping Ram, that doesn't make sense. It's practically, because especially with Lord Ramchandra, You know, the human-like nature is there, form, and also human-like pastimes is there. And we also see that conjugal relationship, you know, even though with Sita, you know, she is worshipping, she is, you know, generally we see her in a role of, you know, service, you know, as the wife serves the husband. We know the conjugal relationship is there, but it's not openly manifest, you know, kissing and, you know, hugging and so many things. So, but we see the aspect of service. Same with Lakshmi. Lakshmi is worshipping the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. It's a conjugal relationship, actually, but it's not openly manifest, you know. So, but with Krishna, that conjugal aspect is more openly. So, you know, therefore the closeness of Ram, especially Ram, Nrisimha, amongst the various avatars, that their qualities are closer to Krishna. And especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna. So by becoming absorbed in, you know, Krishna in any of his forms is very, very helpful to think of Krishna. You know, if you see in the, I'm not sure if this is the Hamsa Dutta or Uddhava Sandesh, Hamsa Dutta, where Lalita, I think he's speaking and sending a message to Krishna. But she described to him, you know, don't be cruel like Ram, you know, who killed Vali and, you know, you know, we know that you are Varaha who delivered the earth. Come and deliver us from what is sunk in the mire, you know, so. You know, in this way she describes, we know you're like, we see your qualities in them, and we know you're that personality. So, here's Lalita, and she is thinking of Krishna only, absorbed in the separation, you know, because Radharani and Krishna are separated, and yet she's seeing, she's talking about the different avatars. So it's not an impediment on any level to actually meditate upon Krishna, seeing him, his different features manifest not only in this material world but also, you know, in the avatars of the Lord. Even when we look at a human being, Prabhupada says, when a pure devotee, when they see a tree, they don't actually see a tree, they see Krishna. Does that mean they see him standing there? They see there's a spirit soul within that tree. That's Krishna's spiritual energy. The tree itself is a manifestation of Krishna's, you know, eight different aspects of the material energy. The super soul, Krishna's aspect, is there. So when they're seeing, all I see is Krishna. Krishna's in that. And by as soon as they think of Krishna, then they also see his form. So how much more easy is it to think of Krishna through any of these different avatars and the teachings like that? So, the although as described in this verse, Krishna, he is one personality, but he also manifests as Paramatma, he also manifests as Brahman, and we can meditate upon him, and if we understand that he is non-different from all the various avatars, Paramatma, Brahman, and all the multifarious energies are his energies. If we understand that Krishna, think of Krishna in that way, that one personality of Godhead, and have faith in that. Yes, you are the same person as Ram. You are Dattatreya. You are Shiva. You are Brahma. You know. You are the soul. That's your energy. You're also the material energy. That's your energy. There's nothing but you. If we have faith that everything is Krishna and think of Krishna in that way, that person can go back to the spiritual world. But that is very rare, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. Although it's very easy, as Prabhupada described, generally the process of liberation is very difficult. Generally, if you, you know, there are millions and millions of people throughout the world who hear the Gita, but they do not hear through Prabhupada Bhagavad Gita as it is. And therefore, you know, they hear the Gita, they understand it's important, but then they say, but I have my God, our God is Ram. I'm thinking, but you just told me you read the Gita, and then you distinguish that Ram is something separate. So therefore you don't take so much interest in the Gita. So this is what happens. They think, oh, you know, yes, we read the Gita, but really we follow the teachings of our Lord. I'm thinking, well, which part of the Gita did you read? You know, the glories of the author on the back cover? Or, you know, which part did you actually read? You know, if you actually read the Gita, you'll understand that that one personality of Godhead, he's not, again, when you think of God, you don't think that what he does is, he says, you know, I'll say one thing and I'll really confuse them because I'm going to go over there and say something different to all of that lot over there. You know, he doesn't, he just, you know, he speaks the absolute truth in all his different forms. So, you know, when we, even if we study the teachings of the Buddha, we understand. That's Krishna speaking, but it's said very clearly, in that form, I'm speaking, but I'm actually, I am trying to bewilder. But I'll tell you, don't follow this yourself if you want to be my devotee. But, you know, for a particular reason, I am trying to bewilder some people. Like that. So he'll tell you straight out. You know, just like, you know, sometimes if you're with your father or a friend and there's some difficult situation, they say, look, you know, don't take this, I've got to tell this person such and such, but you know, don't, you know, you know the truth, but I've got to say because there's this whole problem. So, you know, he'll tell you like that. So therefore, anyone who actually reads the Gita, they can't neglect the Gita as they do and just say, oh, but I'm going to this person. Because the thing about the Gita is that everything you need to know is there in the Gita. That's the importance of it. So if you say, you know, yes, look, we read the Gita, but really we take our main teachings from Ram. You know, we've read the Ramayana. Will you identify within the Ramayana the five main principles that you need to know in order to make sure that you know the main things, leaving one of them out, you really, you know, finish on the spiritual path? You'll not find that. Where is that? You find that in the Gita. That is why it's so important. Therefore, no matter which aspect of the Lord that you follow, knowing that he is one, you always have to come back that when he took the trouble to come here personally and teach the main things that anyone has to know, the things that cannot be left out, then that is the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, cannot be neglected no matter which manifestation of the Lord you follow. And without understanding that means that what have you understood from the Gita? And if you can't understand the Gita, which is the ABCs of spiritual knowledge, what are you getting from the Ramayana? And the Vedas and Dattatreya and like this. What are you getting from them? You can't even understand ABC. You're taking from something else. So there is a lot of nonsense that goes on, but if we hear the Bhagavad Gita and we hear it from Srila Prabhupada, that process of hearing, and we have faith, as Prabhupada says here, He says it here. It is confirmed here. He says it in this purport, but he says it a little bit more elaborately in this Bhagavad Gita 4.9. So I'll read what he says here again, just to summarise and finish. He says, this Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita, personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculation, attains the highest perfection of stage of liberation simply by accepting this truth on faith. One can without a doubt attain liberation. And this is the difference between the millions of people who hear the Gita, is that they don't hear it with faith. That is the difference. If one hears the Gita from a proper authority and hears it with faith, that person will attain liberation. If they hear the Gita not from a proper authority and without faith in the Gita, they will not attain liberation. So it's not that, I've heard the Gita so many times. It doesn't mean that they'll get liberated. Even with Gandhi. No, Gandhi had no faith in Krishna's personality of God. What is that liberation? Prabhupada said. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Yeah, someone who simply believes the Gita and hears it from a proper authority, and they have authority, they have faith in that, that person is guaranteed liberation. In fact, they're already liberated. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that even if you accept what Krishna says, from the very beginning. Krishna is saying this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you hear the Gita, and Krishna is saying it, Prabhupada is saying it, Arjuna is accepting, Vyas, who am I to challenge them? I'll accept. If you, from the very beginning, you may not understand how Krishna is God. You may not even know what is the definition of God. What is God? What is it to be God? But Krishna is saying he's that person. I don't understand all that. But the authorities are saying that. So if someone accepts that, they're liberated from the very beginning of the reading of the Bhagavad Gita. And yet someone can read it, thousands of times, hundreds of times, without ever having faith in that. And, they're licking the outside of the bottle of the honey. So, your question is like this. If someone licks the outside of the bottle of honey and someone actually, tastes the honey within, which one is better? That's my question to you. And which one would you say is better? And what does it matter? What are the qualities of the person with the honey? I mean, an atheist can get the honey. A person in Tamagoon can eat honey. If a professor licks the outside of the bottle, then he's not getting any honey. So it doesn't matter what is the qualification of the person licking the honey. You either lick the jar or you get into it. Anyone can read the Gita, and Krishna is speaking just very plainly. And someone says, who am I to challenge Krishna? He's saying he's the Supreme Person of Godhead. How can I challenge that? Who am I? I'm a street kid. So then you accept that, and all of a sudden you're reading the Gita, accepting that, and you're getting so much nectar in your life. I remember reading the Gita from the very beginning, and every time the word Krishna would come, it was like there was something on my tongue, some nectar on my tongue. I'd say it again, Krishna, and I'd be thinking, what is that? I can't quite understand something. I'm saying the word Krishna. I'm reading the Gita and then Krishna comes and then I'll say it loudly, Krishna. And I was thinking, there was some nectar there, And I still remember to this day that sort of there's something nice, you know, there's something really nice about that. But you won't get that. You know, there was some honey in there. So, because I just heard, you know, a little bit of faith and prophecy.
You still get the honey when you say Krishna.
Yeah. I wouldn't be here if I... Yeah. Thank you.
You mentioned that if we have a sweet relationship with God, and then we attain Krishna. But in our sadhana bhakti, we are practicing dasa to be a servant. So by that definition, can we attain Krishna or will we go to Nirvana?
Now, if you're performing sadhana for the purpose of worshipping Krishna, then you go to Krishna. Within Madhurya Rasa, so if we start, Santa Rasa is the first rasa where someone has an appreciation of God, but they're not necessarily acting upon that in a loving exchange, but they appreciate. If you add another quality to that rasa, that nectar of that relationship with the Supreme, and add loving service, it still has the quality of attachment to the Lord, plus now this loving service taste. So both of them there, and as you progressively go, each time you add another quality. So you add another quality to dasya, a little bit of confidentiality. So there's something a little sweet, a little nectar that's not there, and then you keep adding until you get to conjugal. So within conjugal love is dasya. So it's not as if you're learning something which is your discard. See? It's not by... but we have to start. We can't jump to conjugal. You know, same with, you know, for instance, if someone were to serve the president or the queen, you would go there and you would begin as a servant. You don't go there, look, you know, let me jump on your lap, give you a big hug, queen. You know, that'd be inappropriate. But, you know, there was one time our prime minister... didn't he give her a slap on the bum?
Oh, no, he touched her back.
He touched her back. See, he just touched her back. I thought he slapped her. How the, you know, news changes. But he touched her back, and that was too intimate, you know. And still they talk about it to this day. It's one of the infamous moments worldwide, you know, the Prime Minister touched her back. Because it was too intimate. He hadn't, you know, by humble service, gradually friendship, and then amongst friends, gradually confidentiality. But the service and the appreciation, they never disappear. Even when you're very closely associated with the Queen, it's not as if, you know, she says, oh, you know, can you do this for me? Oh, no, no, no. You know, we're friends now. You know, I'm not doing anything for you. But, so, you're not learning anything by that you're going to discard. It's actually part of the eventual rasa of Madhurya. But you can't get to Madhurya unless you actually at least understand first, Santa. Santa means... and we're not on the platform of dasya rasa on prema bhakti. We're dasya rasa, which is sort of more generic. It's a general, you know. And we're also, as Krishna explains, Prabhupada explains, you know, Krishna is the supreme friend. So he's saying that, you know, we can be friends. We can be, but that's not the what do they call it? Friendship, sakya. That's not the Sakya Rasa of Prema Bhakti. It's a generic friendship that, you know, we should have a friendly attitude with God. Not the, you know, let's slap him on the back and jump on his shoulders and joke with him and things like that. So, you know, the dasya and the sakya, which we are learning, which are qualities of the nine processes of devotional service, there is a generic, you know, general friendship and general service attitude that we should have. And by doing that, gradually, you know, there will become a complete detachment from the material world and complete attachment to Krishna, which is Santa. And then that when Prema Bhakti is there, then it can mature into dasya, you know, conjugal, like that. So, it's part of that process to Madhurya Rasa. It's not something that we're taking the wrong path. Attachment to Krishna by hearing about him, it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2. Especially by hearing and chanting. And the hearing process is very important. Just like Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, he would go and hear from Bhaktivinoda Kaur. You know, we know that hearing is very important, especially in the beginning, but we shouldn't think, oh, now I'm a big preacher, you know, hearing's not so important. Shravanam, is a process which can be done, especially must be done in the beginning, which means, you know, maybe the first 30 years. But, it's not to be discarded that there's something from the for beginners. Just like deity worship. Deity worship is especially important in the beginning. But it's not that, you know, you never saw Prabhupada discard deity worship. You know, it was just as important as on the absolute platform as anything else he did for Krishna. Why? Because anything we do in devotional service, we're doing for Krishna. So therefore, what to speak of deity worship, you know, cleaning the toilets, you know, whatever. You know, everything we do, we're doing it for Krishna. Therefore, you know, whatever it is, we don't care. If it's for Krishna, we'll put our heart and soul into it. But still, in the beginning, deity worship and hearing are very, very important. Deity worship and hearing, but that hearing must be, you know, we must hear, from Prabhupada particularly, and even when we're hearing from other devotees, we feel that I'm hearing from other devotees Prabhupada's full philosophy. Not that I'm hearing from other devotees something where there's sort of diminishing Prabhupada has done or said. We certainly don't want that. Hearing, you know, from other devotees, the purpose of the gurus in ISKCON is to connect us with Prabhupada and help us to understand his teachings. Not to give their own teaching. That, oh, Prabhupada's, you know, something different there, but I've got something new or better. So, you know, they can expand it, they can help to explain things that Prabhupada said, which are very difficult, but should never, ever impede us from, you know, somehow diminish Prabhupada's teachings as if there's something better or higher or something negative about it. Like that. So that hearing is very, very important. And if you hear, according to the Bhagavatam, if you hear daily, and study Prabhupada's books, which is the same as hearing from Prabhupada, that attachment does come automatically. So it's not automatic in the sense that you don't do anything, but it is automatic in the sense you hear and chant and associate devotees especially. And in the sixth canto, the third canto, Prabhupada says in the purport, quoting the Srimad Bhagavatam, that amongst the processes, the nine devotional processes, hearing and chanting are the most important. So, therefore, you know, we are a preaching movement, and preaching is, you know, hearing and chanting. You know, you're talking, you're hearing, you're reciprocating. Within preaching, the two most powerful, prominent aspects of devotional service are predominant. So therefore, by preaching and filling your devotional life with, even if you're a pujari, that hearing and chanting must be predominant. Pujaris who don't have a predominance of hearing and chanting will gradually lose their taste for pujari work. And that's what Prabhupada said happened in India. Now many people are following ISKCON, but previously, even more previously, a lot of temples were being neglected. And he said that's because the hearing and chanting was reduced, and therefore in India there was a great decline in the way they looked after the temples and the deities. And in ISKCON, we will have this. He said, if you don't hear and chant properly, the deities will be like a great stone burden that you carry around your neck. Oh, I have to get up every morning, you know, my life revolves around it, you know, I'm sort of, you know, so many things I want to do, and I've got to do this deity worship. He said it'd be like a stone burden around the neck. But if they're hearing and chanting, then, you know, ever fresh. Whatever service you do in ISKCON, cooking, cleaning, managing, must have a predominance of hearing and chanting. And if that is there, that you become attached to your service, and then gradually that attachment to the service transfers fully to attachment to Krishna. You know, for many years, our main attachment is to the service. Krishna is that service. You know, that service means Krishna is there. You're connected with him. But gradually, it does connect more to his name, form, qualities, personalities, that attachment comes like that. I think from Ruchi to a Shakti, I think that's one of the differences between Ruchi and a Shakti. You know, that attachment is there, but, you know, initially it can be more to the service and to Krishna, but then gradually the attachment to Krishna becomes even more predominant. We better leave it there. Thank you. Hare Krishna.